We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
South Carolina, the Gamecocks don't have to worry about it. Even though Clemson's in the ACC, which they don't have as good of a television deal now as the SEC does with everything. We'll see what the advent of the ACC network does and create, you know, closing the gap between the ACC schools and the SEC schools. But Clemson doesn't have to worry about anything. But
Clemson's not doing near as well as the SEC schools are, and they're waiting on that ACC network to come along to get another 8, 10, 12 million on top of that and be more competitive.
But let me read you this. Conference USA entered into a new multimedia rights deal early this year with CBS Sports. Another deal with ESPN for digital content on ESPN Plus was also recently announced. The new media contracts are expected to bump television payouts per school from $200,000 to $400,000.
That's good. That's doubling. It's something.
But
they were making $1 million 2 years ago. They're making $1 million per school 2 years ago. And once the renegotiation happened after that mass exodus of Conference USA to the American Athletic Conference, there's no value left in Conference USA. All the good teams left.
Well, the point being, I mean, we're talking about, you know, this poll or this ranking or this list that came out in the last couple of weeks where Texas and Texas A&M were the only schools at over $200 million, and then you looked at schools like Michigan and Ohio State and the $185 million. $400,000 for a TV contract payout for Conference USA, yet they're supposed to be competing at the you know, at that level of Division One football. I mean, Diesel, what's the answer to this? Because UAB had literally one of the sickest stories go down here in the last 48 hours. You're talking about they had hired a guy that I had met multiple times, Zach Schreiber, who was the sports information director at Samford there in Birmingham, Alabama. Samford's in the Southern Conference with Furman and Wofford, and I'd met him up there at Media Days. He had been at Samford for a while, so 14 years, actually, he had been at Samford. So he gets hired on by UAB to come over as men's basketball SID, a couple other things, pay raise, everything else. Well, Friday, June 15th, 2 days before the new start of his job at UAB, the University Human Resource Department at Alabama, Birmingham, informed him the position was no longer available.
Oh.
He said the call came in at 4:29 p.m. Samford's Human Resource Department closed at 4:30. Went on to say, had they called 4 hours earlier, I would have likely been able to keep my job at Samford. But due to budget and downsizing and television revenue for the Conference USA schools, the athletic department at UAB was forced to eliminate 12 positions, saving $400,000.
That's a very sad story.
That's their TV payout right there.
Yep. Yep.
Which begs the question, Sturge. Yes, it was a hack job, the way that UAB administration decided to shut their program down in the middle of the night. They didn't go through the proper channels. They just decided, all right, we're shutting it down. We're closing it up. Closing shop. No more football here at UAB. And I feel for the athletes. I feel for the student athletes that invested, that decided they wanted to come there, that said, you know what? Yeah, I'm going to give you 4 years of my life to your college football program. It stunk for those guys. But is this not proof that they should not have brought the football program back? I mean, a lot of people raised a lot of cane and yelled and screamed, oh, my God, we got to get football back. How dare you? How dare you? And then, boom, they got to cut 12 people's jobs because they can't afford them. They shut down for
a reason.
In
reality, yep. And, well, first of all, they were shut down by the wrong person at the wrong time back the first time. It, you want to talk about a contentious emotional meeting. If you ever saw the videos of the football team being told by the athletic director, I mean, that thing got pretty ugly there real quickly. And that's why I think Bill Clark, the head coach at UAB, if I'm a lower-level Power 5 AD right now, he's definitely on my top five list because he just navigated one of the worst things that we'll see in college football history. But, again, one of the things is they had to get in the facilities race and get a new stadium in UAB. And trust me, they need it. Legion Field should have been torn down the last time I exited there in 1990. Never say never. I was like, dude, I'll never come back to this crap hole in my life. And I got sent down to shoot the South Carolina UConn Birmingham Bowl like 9 years ago in the cold. I was like, that's why you never say never when it comes to this business. But, I mean, my God, how many black eyes can one school particularly take? And I get the fact you got to cut positions and save money, but you called 1 minute before the business office closed. That is the ultimate screw job when it comes to one person in Max Schreiber.
It's really disappointing to see. It's disappointing that UAB was cutting it so close, I guess. You would think with all that they went through and all the budgeting they had to do to figure it out, that it wouldn't be a situation where they'd get caught off guard and have to cut a lot of people. Or that they could have found a way to maybe we bridge them all for 3 months, let them go out and find another job, and just kind of bleed them out gradually instead of just, boom, making the cut. So you don't know all the details around it, but I'm very surprised that they kind of got caught with their pants down again.
Well, here's the deal, and I can't fathom it because it doesn't affect my school or the one that I'm covering here in the upstate or when I cover in the Midlands, South Carolina. But here is what the athletic director said. We're in stable financial shape and have been, but what has occurred is just a buildup of lack in conference revenues. The conference revenues that we had anticipated having when we reinstated football have diminished significantly, and so that really is the issue, and that's the same with the other schools. So what do you do, Diesel? You know, you say you don't want to compete for a Group of Five playoff because there's not enough eyeballs. In the long run, the schools like North Dakota State, James Madison, who took the look at moving up and said, nope, we ain't doing that. Is there something at times to be in a bigger fish in a smaller pond?
Well, calling them up at the last minute, literally the last minute, it's like that scene in Office Space where the Bobs are explaining to Peter. That's why they always call people and fire them on a Friday because there's less chance of an incident. You don't call them on a Monday. You call them on a Friday because they're not going to make a scene. And I feel like that's probably what happened with that situation. You know what the real answer, Sturge, is? And you're not going to like it. The real answer is a forced redistribution of wealth, and the Power Five schools aren't going to—they're not going to agree to that. They won't. They would rather say, "All right, you other 75 or so schools—I don't know how many schools are in the Group of Five level—but somewhere in the range of 75 schools, they're like, you guys can go kick rocks for all we care. We don't need you. We don't want you. We don't want to be associated with you. We don't want to play you. We don't want to see you on our schedule, and we don't want to prop you up financially." That's what that's how Power Five schools believe. Alabama doesn't care about UAB. Auburn doesn't care about UAB. They say they can go away, and then we got more fans and we got more money. That's the answer. It's just that it'll never happen. The best bet is to create a singular Group of Five network, something that's looking out for and negotiating for all of the Group of Five as a whole, rather than these five individual conferences all trying to negotiate for their smaller and smaller and smaller pieces of this pie. If they could collectively bargain, they'd probably be in a better position.
All right, so you say that Bama's and the Auburn's and the Clemson's don't need them, but what about every time they stroke a check for $800,000 to $1 million now when it comes to one of these out-of-conference games? Or do you hold out for more? You know, is that the way that you can increase some revenue? Because, quite frankly, the Power Five conferences can't get incestuous and just schedule each other.
Why not? Why couldn't Alabama, instead of playing Samford, why couldn't they schedule Iowa State? There's no difference in competition level.
They would. You would like, but it'll never happen. I mean, well, number one, here in the state of South Carolina. People fail to realize, Mark, that it was a decade ago that the state of South Carolina, when they were battling some budget issues, literally came to Clemson in South Carolina and go, schedule an in-state FCS opponent every year. You don't know how much that would be helping out. There's a little bit of redistribution of the wealth right there, if you will, but it helps those budgets. And each year, there are two FCS teams here in this state that are getting paychecks from Clemson and South Carolina. So they actually kind of do need each other.
But my point is, if the state didn't tell Clemson and South Carolina that they had to schedule Wofford and Furman and the Citadel, do you think they'd schedule them just out of the kindness of their own hearts? No.
Clemson had always there's a lot of relationships.
Yeah. Once every 5 years.
Kind of thing.
Okay.
Number two. And then also, you know, don't take this the wrong way, Diesel, but you need to have there's a reason that you schedule one of your weakest home opponents for homecoming every year. Why, Childress?
So that everybody goes home happy.
Thank you. What are they more likely to do when they have a smile on their face?
Donate money.
Oh, you think
we might
come
back?
Stroke a check to the athletic department or to the university? It's all a money making scheme. It's all doesn't matter. It's all it comes down to.
So, Diesel, what about a non-Power 5 playoff? So, I'm looking at TV ratings from last year. The championship game between North Dakota State and James Madison, that pulled 1.5 million viewers, and that's for FCS. And there are a couple of bowl games that pulled almost 2 million involving teams that are not in the Power 5 that are in the bowl games. Why not put 8 teams and run those games, and you could potentially move the needle where you get 3, 4, 5 million people watching those games? It seems like a lot, but it's not that long of a walk to, you know, from what these lower division championship games are already getting, and maybe that would drive some more money.
Childress, when I was in
– I know you don't like it.
When I was in college, they showed every single FCS playoff game on ESPN or ESPN2. You know how many FCS playoff games are on TV now? One. The championship game. Everything else is on streaming or it's buried on some other network. That's what ESPN has done this. They have diminished the investment that they place into – FCS as a whole. And coming from an App State perspective, probably a Georgia Southern perspective, Troy, a lot of the teams that have just recently made the jump up, they don't want to be, it took them a decade or 15 years to get where they are. They don't want to suddenly be relegated right back to the same place they just were.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I get both sides of the issue, but when you watch, this is when you realize how few conference or how few schools actually turn a profit when it comes to their athletic departments. You know, most schools subsidize because it's not about football. It's like, you know, I think about West Virginia being in the freaking Big 12. It's not about the Mountaineers football program on Saturdays. That's one thing. It's about their cross-country team trying to get to Manhattan, Kansas for a conference meet against Kansas State. That's where travel expenses, time out of the classroom, and everything else got out of whack. We pigeonhole everything into football on Saturdays, but it's really, as you well know from over at Furman, you know, it's so many of those non-revenue sports that it can eat up the money and travel expenses, and that's why I think Upstate and their athletic director this past Friday, Diesel, was so excited about their move from what the Atlantic Sun or, you know, to their new conference, because 300 miles was the longest drive from them to one of their fellow institutions.
So that'll save them a lot of money, save them a lot of overnights. I guess when I look at it, I'm like, why not try something different? It doesn't look like the non-Power 5 schools are gaining momentum, getting, you know, closer to breaking even every year, all those type things. Why not think out of the box? Why not do something crazy and different one year and see if it does generate more revenue that helps the schools out a little bit? I mean, even if you could move the needle a couple of million fans, that could be $100,000 more for each one of these conferences' teams.
All right. When we come back, what about – what Ian Fitzsimmons told us just 20 minutes ago. What about just expanding it out to 8 and incorporating some more teams? And then, and I agree with him, I never got bored with the Bulls run. You know what? Now I'm kind of interested. Can anybody knock off Golden State? But, again, a couple other ideas is we're going to talk with Brad Edwards of ESPN at 5:37. We'll solve all the ills in college football today. That's the dumbest comment that I've heard during a break on this show in forever. You got to bring that garbage to the air, Diesel.
Well, what I was saying was if the Uber haves, like Alabama, Michigan, Clemson, Florida State, Southern Cal, Ohio State, if they'd all break off about $5 million off of the enormous – what's the SEC payout per school right now on media rights, $20 million a year?
No, it's they get around 40.
Yeah. All right,
yeah, it's around 40.
If each one of those would break off $5 million off their media rights budget, boom, redistribute that to the G5 programs that are struggling, they can make budget. And then guess what? You get to play them for homecoming.
You ain't taking them out. Get your hands out of my cookie jar when it comes to that stuff.
Well, then what do you want, Sturge? You're the ones who got the money.
I want my cake, and I want my cake, and I want to eat it too.
You got the money, but you don't want these programs to die.
I don't.
Are they going to die though? I mean, some of them have to be making money. It can't be where every one of these schools is losing money that's not in the Power Four.
Well, if you took away student body subsidies, then they're not making money.
There's some truth in that, but here's the deal. I also think these schools look at football, which is the money killer, if you will, the expenditure, as an advertising basis for the institution now. So if you're a little bit in the hole when it comes for, you know, the end of the year, you kind of consider, well, that's what it took to advertise this to get us out there. Because, hey, man, I mean, you think we've got a problem in football? Yet there's 7 new schools that are bringing on teams this year, 13 more set for next year. And we're not talking Division I. They're starting out at D3 and FCS and that. But the point being, if they didn't think it was relevant to the idea of the university, these small schools wouldn't be starting these football programs, 20 in the next 2 years alone.
That's what I'm saying. They're doing well enough. I mean, I bet App State's football team is making money at the end of the day. You guys are packing out that stadium every year. You're going to the championship games in the conference. You're going to bowl games. I bet you at the end of the day, App State's in, you know, doing well. So for every UAB, there is a great story as well in the non-Power 5. And look how great UCF did this year, USF. These teams are doing great and growing. So some of the teams are making money. Some of them just haven't figured out how to do it.
So do we just go to 8 teams and go, screw it? In how you get to whichever representative from the group of 5, now you say – let them play it off and decide. Diesel's like, crap, how many football games can these college kids, I don't care if it's FCS, D2, Division I, should not play any more than 15 football games in a season. NFL is 16 games long. They can't even get their players union to buy in to go in 18 games now because it's so physical, and all those pro players have to do is show up at the football facility. They don't have to deal with everything else. So 15, in my opinion, is max when it comes for college football.
Mark Childress, you were asking about financials. I just so happen to have the USA Today Group of 5 financial report, and the largest budget within the Group of 5 is the University of Connecticut. They brought in last year $83 million, $83 million in change. They spent $83 million in change. $41 million of that money is self-generated.
And you know what is unique about UConn athletics that nobody else has in that group of 5?
Hey, the women's basketball.
A dynasty. I mean, now we watch to see not them win, to see them get beat like they did against Notre Dame this year and go, holy crap. I mean, that's how big they've gotten. So they're sort of the aberration when it comes to that because of that women's basketball.
Well, the drop-off is significant from there. The second biggest budget in the group of 5 is Cincinnati at $60 million. So there's a $23 million drop-off in athletic budget from first to second. Now, you were asking about a school like Appalachian State. Our budget last year was $35 million, $13 million of that was self-generated. That means ticket sales and concessions and all that stuff. That means 60% of the athletic budget is subsidized. 60% has to be subsidized by students and by the state and whoever else subsidizes these football programs.
And again, please understand that it's not just football that's siphoning that money away. It's you've got to be compliant. You know, football really, you know, the whole deal back that you got to have X amount of women's programs to offset football based on scholarships has always been skewed because of the 85 scholarships at the D1 level. But it brings up a fascinating deal. Listen, the swimming team, the cross-country team, they've got to get their money, their travel expenses, where they're staying when they go to the conference meet. All that comes out of the total athletic department revenue. It's a fascinating, but it's life. It's life in these United States. That's like Childress. That's like me asking you, hey, man, cut me some off of this big-time money from your other job. What am I going to get? You're number one. It ain't going to be with the index finger, right?
Yes.
That's America, unfortunately, but there's no fair and equitable way.
Well, does
there's
that mean no that schools who are 75% subsidized by student fees, they should cut football? I mean, that would be the financially responsible thing to do, would be to cut things until you're making money.
But here's the deal. Go back and look at the studies, and Diesel, I'm sure you can pull one up during the break because we'll have Brad Edwards from ESPN talking college football and some University of Alabama shenanigans, if you will, here in a little bit. But, again, it's just I think you have to view it as these presidents, these administrators have looked at the studies that show campuses that have football typically have happier students for whatever reason. But you can go Google it right now. There's case studies out there when it comes
to that. Sure, they say that athletics is the front door of the front porch of a university.
Yeah. I mean, talk about SMU. When they were kicked out of football for 2 years, they had to celebrate homecoming with the soccer game. You remember? You watched Pony Express.
Yep.
So, I mean, that's a big deal.
But if all these schools were in such dire financial straits, like you're saying, they wouldn't be playing football. You would be seeing chunks of conferences making a group decision to say, we're not playing 12 games this year. We're only going to play five. Or we're cutting the football programs. Or we're going to cut a bunch of our extra sports to try to make up the gap. But no one's doing
that. Well, you can't cut extra sports because that's Title IX.
That is true. But, again, I just come back to the case, 20 new football programs here over the next 2 years. There's got to be something to it. Image, consider it marketing, consider it advertising. I don't know what you do, but if you got to subsidize it, trust me, in these state funding issues, times that we're going through, if there wasn't a ROI, return on investment for the football program, I think the states would make the decision for some of the schools.
Yeah, they probably would. So, again, I suggest try something different. Why not a four-team non-power playoff? Why not try to do some things to grow the attention that these smaller schools are not getting today? Why not try something different if you're not happy with where things are now?
All right. When we come back, we'll get into – yeah, listen – he was the BCS guru back in the day. Brad, do you realize who hated the advent of the college football playoff as much as anybody? Because he was literally known as the BCS guru. And, of course, you can hear him on College Football Saturdays on ESPN Radio, of course, on television throughout the week after the rankings come up. It's Brad Edwards of ESPN. He's going to join us on the other side. We'll talk about some of the issues. We'll talk some SEC media day next week, and we'll ask him some questions about his time in the Sigma Chi house at the University of Alabama. It's Straight Up with Sturge. We're live here, 1860 Woodruff Road. It's Bada Bing Pizza starting to get in here for dinner. Come get a slice, come get a pie, come get a sandwich, whatever it is, you can't go wrong at Bada Bing Pizza. All right, man. Part two of Iota Sigma Chi University, Alabama, is I'm teaching Mark Childress some of the finer things about going to school in the Southeastern Conference versus Furman University. Is Brad Edwards. You can follow him on Twitter at JBradEdwards, ESPN College Football Insider, also an analyst for Game Day. A lot of other things with ESPN. But, Brad, did you have some kind of offensive coordinator position on the Pledge football team in 1990?
Absolutely. Actually, 2 years in a row. So I was the offensive coordinator on the team that Ian played on. I'm assuming he's the one who dropped that information on you. Yeah. And that was a slugfest of a game. Very well played. We had a late score, won the game. Brilliant play calling. You know, that's an unbiased opinion. The next year, I was offensive coordinator and Ian was the defensive coordinator, and it was an absolute rout. I'm not sure if the statute of limitations has expired, so I don't want to talk about some of the things that Ian encouraged our players to do to the other team, because a kid on the other side got hospitalized, and I'm not sure he's out of the hospital yet. But anyway. That was the nature of Pledge football. You remember that, right? Did you play in one of those?
Absolutely. Hell yeah. We had 2,505 kegs against Delta Tau Delta in 1986, man. I mean, it was crazy.
There's nothing like a bunch of 18-year-olds playing full contact, no pads football.
What our parents sent us to Alabama for, no doubt about it. We're joined by Brad Edwards. And, Brad, those were some fun times back in the day. But you're a big numbers guy. And here's the deal. Mark Childress, my co-host here, is a Furman grad with some Clemson. He married a Clemson woman. Diesel, my producer, he's an App State grad, all right? So is there any way to ever fight the money issues? This story that rose its head at UAB about Max Schreiber literally losing his job because they had to get rid of positions there. Is there any way to make this fair and equitable in college football?
I don't think there's a way to make it equitable. Now, fair is a completely different question, because the schools that are making the money are keeping it. Now, I think if you're in the boat of the have-nots, the question you ask is it fair for the Vanderbilts of the world to be able to ride the coattails of others to make all the money they're making, when others are not as fortunate? And look, I mean, some of these schools were just in the right place at the right time when these conferences formed many decades ago, and they're reaping the benefits of it now. I don't see the finances ever being close. I mean, certainly if you look at what's happened first with the BCS and now with the playoff, it's translated into more money for everybody. I mean, what we call them, group of five, mid-majors in basketball, if you want to refer to those schools as such, they're making more money now than they did years ago. The problem is that the other teams that are in the major conferences are making exponentially more. And so the gap is just widening.
Brad, Mark Childress here. I'm curious what you like and don't like about the way the College Football Playoff Committee is selecting and ranking their teams. So I know you used to do it so well back in the BCS days. What do you think they're getting right, and what do you think they're getting wrong?
You know, I don't really have a problem with their selections. I have an issue with their written protocol and their, at least to me, inability to follow it. I think if you're going to say you want the four best teams, then you shouldn't put conditions on that. When you start listing criteria and saying this is how we're going to define best, I think it kind of ceases to be best, and it becomes something else, you know, with all these conditions placed upon it. And I think that where they've really had the most trouble, in my opinion, is this clause that's in there that says that for a non-champion to get into a playoff, and we've seen that happen 2 years in a row now, Alabama last year, Ohio State the year before that, for a non-champion to get in, that team has to be unequivocally better than the conference champions to go in ahead of those teams. And I don't personally believe that Alabama was unequivocally better than Ohio State last year. At the time that the selections took place, before Alabama had beaten Clemson and Georgia, I don't think you could say unequivocally, which is without any doubt, that they were better than Ohio State. I think the year before, you couldn't say that Ohio State was unequivocally better than a Penn State team that had beaten them and won the conference that they both played in. And now, look, could you say the other team was probably better? I think you could. And so, for me, that's the issue. I don't have a problem with putting teams in that didn't win their conference. I'm fine with that. I don't think there's any issue with the concept that two of the best four teams in the country could be from the same conference. I think if you're going to put that in there and say that this is the way it works, is that you have to be unequivocally better, you need to at least acknowledge that you know what unequivocally means. And if you're not going to acknowledge it, take it out of the rules.
As we continue with Brad Edwards, ESPN College Football Insider, you can hear him all day here on ESPN Upstate during the football season as they break it down from campuses across the country. So, Brad, one more before we have a little bit of fun. We've had the argument today. Have James Madison, have North Dakota State, have Montana, have they figured it out for that size institution that, screw it, we'd rather be a bigger fish in a smaller pond, and they have resisted the urge to move up?
Yeah, I don't know the finances of all that. I've never looked into it. So whether you're talking about App State or Georgia Southern, you know, some of the teams that had a lot of success at that level that recently did move up, I don't know. I don't know if they had it to do over again now, would they go back to FCS, or are they perfectly fine being, I mean, let's face it, mostly irrelevant at the FBS level, but probably making more money. That's something you'd have to ask them. You know, one of the issues that always comes up with bowl games is that a lot of these games, and especially the ones that those conferences go to, they don't pay that much money. And what they do pay usually doesn't cover the cost of not only sending the team, but the cheerleaders and the band and all that. And so a lot of them, you know, end up losing money on a bowl trip. And yet, if you're going to be in the FCS, that's why you do it, is to be able to play in a bowl game. And so whether it's worth it to them, whether the financial payoff has been worth it, you'd have to ask someone with those schools, because I'm not sure. But to me, it doesn't seem to make a whole lot of difference. I don't think they are any better off, at least in terms of publicity for their program, than they were when they were playing in the FCS.
All right, so I know you're getting ready. Media days start next week, but let's take a little trip down memory lane, because Ian laid it out for you earlier. He took both of question number three. He said, guess what, you're going to have to do it as well. So you know the first one. Childress was blown away. Dave Matthews Band played in the big party room at the Sigma Chi House. What's the best band you heard in the big party room at the old Iota Sigma Chi House?
All right, I was going to ask you that question, whether Dave Matthews had played there, because they were playing on the Strip when I was in school. Mm-hmm. And so, I knew that they were just a college band at that time. I wasn't sure if they had ever played at the house. Best band, not best known band, but the best band, I'm going to go with the Cheesebrokers.
Yes.
The Cheesebrokers were, as you're aware, an 80s pop cover band. And so a lot of the, you know, like Duran Duran, Rick Springfield, Prince, Flock of Seagulls, that type of stuff, that's what they played. And two of them were Sigma Chi's. And so they played at our house a lot, in addition to being on the Strip all the time. And by the way, they still will play a reunion show in Birmingham every now and then, and they pack the house when they do.
Yeah, especially around Halloween. So Milazzo and Hartford and those guys, absolutely fantastic. All right, mine was Wings and Things. What was your go-to place when it came to a delivery order back at the university?
Delivery order. Sneaky Pete's. I hate to say that, but, I like most college people, I was on a small budget, and and their food was cheap. that was what won the day. Actually, it's funny because I go to Subway a lot now, And I've kind of marveled at how Subway today, like a $5 footlong, is like a great deal. I remember the Subway on the Strip on Tuesdays, my like freshman and sophomore years, they had 2 footlongs for $2 on Tuesdays. And I would go and I would order 2 footlongs and I would sit there and I would eat both of them for one meal. That, by the way, is why I gained 40 pounds my first semester of college.
Yeah, you little guys can eat too. Beer. All right.
I can tell you, it was not true. The beer. It was more the food than it was anything else.
All right. Well, this one probably has something to do with the beer. Did you ever make out on the steps at Tutwiler?
No. Was that a thing?
Dude, you're dropping off one of the sorority pledges at Tutwiler. You never got a little kiss there on the steps, man?
I'm trying to think. I can only remember like 2 times that I ever picked anybody up at Tutwiler for a date.
Okay.
Yeah. No. I guess I missed out. I guess I missed out on
All
something.
Right.
But that was not a thing for me.
All right, we heard 5 minutes of Ian's glory days on the steps.
He was naming names.
Yeah, he literally named the first girl that he kissed on the steps at Tutwiler. And then he put this one on you. Ever pass out or puke in the pajama party maze?
No, okay. I did. I'm kind of ashamed to admit this, but one night walking home from the Strip intoxicated, so walking from the Strip back to the Sigma Chi house, naturally I walked through the quad, and I had to go really bad, and I knew I wasn't going to make it, and I was like, you know what? This might be my only chance ever to urinate on Denny Chimes. So, which for those who don't know, is like the campus landmark, and yeah, it's kind of embarrassing to admit that now, but I did that once.
Well, hey, listen, Brad. Like I said, we're getting into media days next week, and we just decide what can we do to have a little fun. I appreciate you and Ian, of course, playing along, and I always appreciate you carving out some time for us. Tell us what you've got coming up this fall.
Well, right now, I've been working on a metric with our analytics team that is going to help us predict who's going to make the playoff. You know, we've had our FPI and a lot of other things that we've spent a lot of time with in recent seasons, but starting this year, even before the first games are played, we're going to have a metric that's going to give, any given day, each team's chance to make the playoff, and on top of that, their chance to win the national championship. And granted, it's an inexact science, but it's all based on FPI and a number of other things that we're already calculating. And so that'll be fun. And I can tell you that right now, the clear favorite is Clemson, because according to our FPI, Clemson is more than 12 points better than every team on their regular season schedule. And so we give Clemson a way better chance to be in the playoff than anybody else.
Well, listen, hopefully maybe you get to make it to Clemson. We'll get together with Boyd Anderson and a bunch of people and have some fun. But, again, enjoy these final few weeks, Brad. Appreciate everything, bud.
All right, Sturge. Always enjoy it. And you enjoy your last, month and a half before it gets really crazy.
Yep, that's it. All right, thanks, buddy. There's Brad Edwards from ESPN. And trust me, he is Tim Beray Jr. when it comes to that kind of data.
Oh, yeah.
He loves it. He minds it. He lives it. He breathes it. And that's what he has literally carved his niche out in the media. You got to give somebody like that a lot of credit. All right, we got to get out to break. Quick couple of minutes. It's open phones from this point forward. We got questions about SEC media days. We got some college basketball and some Major League Baseball as well. All right, welcome back in. We are live here at Bada Bing Pizza. We're going to have some fun here over the final couple hour, or final hour. Childress is, again, it's open phones from this point on. You want to talk college football, you want to get in on what we've been talking about. We got some more things like Dan Mullen. Dude, quit, put down the paint thinner this quickly into your tenure there in Gainesville. But, Yeah, we were talking about fights and pledge football games with Ian Fitzsimmons and Brad Edwards. And, God, man, just so much fun to remember those days that you're like, crap, I don't want my daughter to hear about this, you know.
But she's heard about it today.
Oh, God, she's been in the Sigma Chi house at Alabama. First of all, we got like this new – you've seen it. I showed you a picture
of it. Yeah, you showed me a picture.
It's like $3.5 million, one of the nicest fraternity houses in the country now. And ain't a spot in the thing. But it ain't what we went through. You know, we had to make grades, go through pledgeship. Now, due to everything that's happened in the fraternity, and I wouldn't trade being a fraternity for anything. And let me tell you who suffers. In Boone, in Tuscaloosa, around Clemson, South Carolina, are charities that depend on those fraternities for Halloween parties and stuff like that. Every Halloween, we would have local kids come trick-or-treat through the fraternity house. You know, so a lot of good. We hear about the bad things, and there are. There's also a lot of good when it comes to those Greek systems as well. Kenneth wants to get in on some college football. Kenneth, I hope you're having a good Wednesday.
Having a great Wednesday. Hello?
Yeah, we're here. What you got?
Okay. Do you guys think that Spartan Methodist or USC Upstate will ever have a football program? And what you think about Presbyterian scholarship?
All right. Well, Kenneth, this much I can't speak for you, but we had the new USC Upstate Athletic on Friday, and right now a hint of it because you already do have one FCS program in Wofford. But here's the thing: can those two coexist? Because they kind of go after a different type of student, if you know what I mean.
Right.
Spartan Methodist is a junior college. I'm not sure. I mean, who are they going to play? I mean, you would literally have to get over into Mississippi and Texas to really take advantage of the junior college program. So I think I've got a good friend, Berkeley King, Rogers Outdoor Equipment, that played football at Presbyterian. And, of course, they're dropping down, as you're mentioning, to D3 non-scholarship. And those former players, they're angry. They're hurt about it. But, again, it becomes a money issue at that level.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you.
All right, appreciate it, Kenneth, because, again, here's the deal. You know, Big South Conference, they just decided, you know what, we'll continue the football thing. And listen, there's ways to subsidize those players once they get on campus. What got the University of Miami in so much trouble back in the day? Pell Grants.
Yep.
So there's some ways to maneuver around this stuff, but it's not like going out there and signing somebody to a national letter of intent. There's no perfect answer. I mean, what do you do if you're PC? Do you go back to, you know, Division II back in the day? Because I maintain the identity back then, whether they wanted to admit it or not, was the old Turkey Day rivalry game with Newberry. I mean, that was actually a big deal when I was growing up.
Yeah. Again, maybe that's another athletic director to talk to and try to start deciphering how these decisions are being made at these different schools. Clearly, PC did not see the investment in the football program needing to continue going forward in the way that it had been before. So it's going to hit their bottom line a little bit.
The
right?
conference kind of evaporated underneath yep. them when it came to – and again – you know, West Virginia can get away with it with their football program, that kind of travel and the fact that, 1,000 miles is the closest institution.
Right.
PC can't take that hit, you know no. what I mean, when it comes to traveling in those types of situations. So when we come back, again, open phones. We're talking college football. But did you see Pac-Man Jones got in a fight?
Yeah, big surprise.
Guess what? Not the outcome that you expected. We'll get into that as well.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh.